KXRN LP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX93.5. This disclaimer is a statement notifying the listening audience that any opinion expressed on the air is not reflective of KX93.5, its management, or its board of directors.
All right. Guess what it is? It's time for Rock to Recovery Radio. And I'm your host, Wes Gear. This is KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM station. They like to call it human crafted radio. This show is also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. They have a bunch of good treatment programs out there. If you're looking for help, please check out New Vista Behavioral Health. They're doing great work. Okay, so I'm feeling the coffee. Thank God. I was so out of it right before the show. Nothing like a good cappuccino to kick in. Okay, so every week I talk about why we're here. And also I want to welcome Rehab 411. We're live tonight for the first time. Trying a new outlet. Trying our show on a little bit of Facebook Live out there. So we're trying to share this message with everybody we can, which ties into the whole concept of why are we here? We're here because this is what we do now. We talk about mental health and addiction and ODs and pain management and harm reduction. You know, everybody's been touched by addiction or you know, had a family member or they're struggling or they got hooked on pain meds or whatever, you know, trauma, PTSD, all that kind of stuff is now no longer hidden. We pull it out into the light and we talk about it. And in so doing, we give each other hope and we help each other not feel alone and we can share answers and we can share our experience, strength, and hope. So tonight, I'm excited about this guest. We booked him a long time ago, and I think we had to do a reschedule.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, so sorry about that. And that was my bad, and my assistant, the lovely Francis, was like, dude, you're not cool, and I don't remember why. But anyhow, so sorry about that. So, champion BMXer, coached the Olympic women's team.
One of the female athletes on the Olympic
okay,
team
got
for
you.
BMX.
And there was another rad thing that I wanted to talk about.
Started a nonprofit organization.
You started a nonprofit Wheels.
Free Wheel Project.
Free Wheel Project.
Yep.
So, and you're sober how long?
12, coming up on 12 years.
Coming up on 12. I just took 11.
There you go.
Can we high five?
There you go.
All right. Yeah. Free Wheel Project.
That's right.
Okay. And in the studio with, and you're a speaker. You go all over speaking.
That's the main thing.
200
days a year now.
Woo.
On the road.
Woo. You're like a road dog touring musician kind of guy now.
Yeah, I'm not where I want to be either. I'm getting close though.
Right on, bro. So this is Tony Hoffman. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for driving down. Let me plug in my phone before it goes uncharged.
Yeah, yeah. I love the organicness of this.
Oh, it's organic.
You have the rush of the radio station. Everything's moving quickly. And then you get the, let me plug in my phone real quick.
Yeah, we're doing the new Facey Bookie Live.
Yeah, yeah.
So like I said, thanks for coming down and sharing, you know, your experience, strength, and hope here live with the people listening.
Absolutely.
So every week I kind of try to figure out where somebody's story starts. Some people, they don't think it's the childhood. It's not really relevant. And some people, it definitely is. For you, where do you start it?
Middle school.
Middle school?
12 years old.
So before 12... Mom and dad, everything's cool.
Yeah, I mean, mom and dad still are cool. 43 yeah. years of marriage, upper middle class family, probably a combined income around $300,000 a year. Had everything that I needed
yeah.
in terms of physicalities.
Yeah.
You know, I had all the sports equipment. I'm an athlete. So if you're listening to me now, I'm an athlete. I played every sport. I was gifted at all the sports. And that was kind of my niche was I was just a naturally gifted athlete.
But basketball,
baseball, soccer, football, rollerblades, skateboards, BMX bikes, volleyball, nice. Tennis. Like I literally, you know, was an all-star pitcher at the same time sponsored by K2 on rollerblades.
Sick.
And could still ride a skateboard at the same time. And nice. Was telling people I'm going to the NBA playing basketball. So
yeah. What'd you play? In basketball,
point guard.
I knew you were going to say
short
that.
White guy. Come on, man.
Sure. Totally.
I wished I was Shaq, but that was never going to happen.
Don't we all?
Yeah.
So. In the go down and just dominate people. Sense.
Yeah. 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 I should have just decided I was going to be a shooter and led that, but no. Yeah. I actually found myself in extreme sports or action sports, what they call them now, and BMX was kind of a better fit for my life. I had a pretty entitled attitude. Was really cocky because I was so good at things, didn't have to work hard, you know, thought people owed me positions or that I was going to play the whole game and I didn't like sitting out.
Yeah.
And I really didn't like losing as a result of other teammates. And so
ooh.
I got into BMX where I loaded the gate by myself. When the gate dropped, I raced by myself. I made decisions by myself and I crossed the finish line as a result of my own hard work, skill set, and decision-making process over that 30 seconds that a BMX race lasts.
And 30 seconds.
30 seconds. 0 to 30 miles an hour in about 2 seconds at the elite level.
Wow.
So we're performance athletes in every stretch of the imagination. So, but at that time, by 12 years old, I started experiencing a lot of suicidal thoughts.
How do you go? So this is a good thing. Well, first of all, I used to be annoyed by guys like you because I was like the heavy metaler dude.
Okay.
Red the long hair.
Yeah.
And I'd get in trouble for everything. But you athletes get away with everything.
Yeah.
In high school.
Yeah.
We get away with everything. Oh, it's okay if you're late. It's okay if you miss.
Yeah. That's actually a big part of my public speaking story with youth audiences is that mm-hmm. here's this kid that got special treatment.
Yeah.
Because we need him on the court. We need him on the field.
Yeah.
We need him wherever he's at. And we need him passing classes. And we need
wink, wink, nod, nod.
Right. And that didn't work out very well for me because when I was young, even it started in elementary school. I remember my wrestling coach or a wrestling coach and my basketball coach getting in a fight over whether I was going to be the ball boy for the basketball team or I was going to start wrestling. Because in fourth grade, you could start wrestling, but you can't play basketball yet. But I was already hanging around the basketball team in third grade. So I was cool with being the ball boy and practicing with the team.
Yeah.
But the wrestling coach was like, hey, you can't play basketball this year. Why don't you come wrestle? And they got in a war over, you know, no, he's not going to wrestle. No, he should be able to wrestle. He let the man choose. And they made me choose right there. It was
fourth
so
grader.
Awkward. Fourth grade. Two adults.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you want to do? Choose.
Choose, Tony.
Yep. And I chose basketball, of course.
Do you remember being scared in that? Like,
yeah,
like I'm kind of
this
like,
is crazy.
I can't win right now.
Yeah, this is. I remember being scared and like, this is crazy. But at the same time, basketball was where my love was at. And so it really wasn't that difficult. If I look back on it now, like further, like looking into it, there was a codependent side that wanted to do wrestling just so I didn't upset the wrestling coach, even though my heart was like, I'm playing basketball, dude. I'm going to be
People
Michael Jordan,
please.
Allen Iverson. Like, I'm not worried about being a wrestler.
Yeah.
So anyways, but I got these suicidal thoughts at start and I'm find out later in my life that a lot of what I was dealing with in terms of being on campus was social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Had social anxiety issues and a lot
Same.
Of social anxiety led to isolation. Isolation led to depression because I'm by myself in my own mind.
So by what age you have suicide?
12.
12.
Yeah, it was clear. And I wanted to kill myself because I didn't like my gift.
So this is great because I think it's cool to show the different origins. You know what I mean? Like you don't have to be the outcast black sheep. We come from all places, right?
Yep.
Here you are. Probably so many kids at that school would dream of just having a little bit of that
mm-hmm.
accepted, you know, in the sports and all that. A little bit of that ability.
Yep.
And it really got, you know,
I didn't like it.
You didn't like it. You know what I was thinking about? What's funny is it's lonely at the top. I was thinking that earlier today.
Well, I think that there was a lot of expectations
yeah.
for me as well.
Yeah.
And I didn't know how to deal with those expectations.
Pressure.
You know, my family, I don't fault my mom and dad for anything, but they were baby boomers. They're in the trucking industry.
Mm-hmm.
So 14, 15, 16 hour days were really common. I was raised by my Paisa babysitter, Vera. And so I didn't have a lot of the structure and discipline that maybe, you know, somebody like my boy KP would have where he held a job at 14 years old and was already paying bills by the time he was 16. And like I say, I don't blame my parents, but I don't think I knew how to deal with the pressure and how I was going to have to be disciplined and structured to take what these coaches saw as potential in my gift and manifest it to some as being a successful athlete, right? So I begin to not like my gift because I don't want the attention. I don't want the weight that comes with it. I remember having a conversation with one of my coaches that said, "You could be a champion, Hoffman. Mm-hmm. Don't you want to be a champion?" I said, "No."
That sounds like manipulation.
Well, he wanted me to work hard. Yeah, I didn't want to show up to practice. I didn't want to do all these extra things that.
But you know what I mean? Done. Like, don't you want to be a champion?
Well,
like,
I look back at it now. If somebody asked me that, I would say, yeah, I do. What else do I need to do on top of what I'm doing now?
Yeah.
And we'll get into that later. But I just didn't like the attention. I didn't like that I was good at sports. I'm an extremely compassionate, empathetic person. And so naturally, my instinct is not want to be better than somebody else. It's to want to understand, want to be there as a care provider and help somebody, and which goes against my gift. Because my gift in sports says that when I get on the field or when I get on the court or when I get on the track, I should want to rip your face off.
Sure.
By any means necessary and cross the finish line first. And so I didn't like the gift, and it made me want to get rid of myself. Because it's like, then I'm isolating at school because of my social anxiety. I don't know who my friends are. I don't know how to make friends. And the depression from the isolation, it's like, now I don't want to get out of bed. I've got all these things that started worrying in middle school.
Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like I've heard a few stories of people that have, for lack of a better term, have like the alcoholic tendency, let's say, before they, you know, get into the drugs.
Isms.
And alcohol. The isms, yep. And it manifests in extreme focus on things. Like for me, it was guitar. For you, it was sports. I have an ex. She got into fashion. Like, I may be a mess on the inside, but I'm gonna look good. And now she's a top designer, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting thing we do.
I still have them.
Yeah,
I
sure.
love fashion. I'm over the top. Like, I have all my clothes tailored, jeans, shirts, hoodies. Like, I take everything to a tailor. I'm over the top.
Yeah, we tend to be a little bit obsessive.
Yeah, but I've just learned that there's things that work for me and there's things that worked against me. Mm-hmm. And I'm really careful about what I introduce into my life based on does it work? Does this work for me or does this work against me type stuff? So
that's a great mantra, a great test, right?
Yeah.
Great litmus test. So tell me, when you're having the 12 years old, you're having the suicidal ideation, how do you deal with it? Do you tell anybody? Do you remember exactly what you're thinking and feeling? Were you crying on your bed?
I remember one night I was in my room with my mom and I was trying to tell her that I hated myself. And like,
that must have not computed to her.
She didn't get it.
Yeah. Well, because you're, you know, I mean, you weren't like some emo kid.
Right. But also, I mean, we're talking about the mid-90s. So we're talking about a baby boomer generation that even today still, when you mention the word mental health, they're like, just get over it.
Yeah.
Tough it up. Yeah. We had to do this stuff when we were kids.
Right.
You might have, but that doesn't make it right.
Exactly.
Because here I am trying to communicate to my mom that I don't like myself. And I could tell that she didn't understand it. And that's not her fault either. So I ran and I jumped into the wall. I ran back and I jumped into the wall.
This is something I can relate to. I'm sorry that I'm smiling.
No. That's cool.
Yeah, totally.
It's not like, I made it. I'm lucky today to have my breath, to have my life. So, you know, for today, we can laugh about it and I'm okay with that.
And some people at home or watching maybe don't understand, but for most of us in recovery, when we laugh, it's because we're like, that's me.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah,
right. I absolutely. Vomited on my grandmother. Oh, haha. We laughed. I vomited because I did it too.
You did too.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, when she didn't have an answer, it just made me feel even more lost, you know, but at the same time, like you didn't go to therapy in the mid 90s. You were crazy if you did that. If you had a shrink, you were crazy. One of my missions
it sounded like weakness back then.
Right. One of my missions on the road when I'm speaking to youth audiences is to get them to understand that the biggest failure I had in my life, besides my attitude up to middle school, was that I didn't talk about my problems.
Right.
I wasn't seeking a therapist. I wasn't talking to the counselor at school. It's okay to do those things. Yep. If you don't do those things, then you bottle it up. That's exactly what I did. I bottled it up. And even though by the time I was a senior in high school, I was featured on the cover of the largest BMX racing magazine in the world. I was the only amateur in the world that held a contract with Fox Racing for BMX, sponsored by Airwalk Shoes, sponsored by Spy Sunglasses, ranked number one in the country. I still wanted to kill myself.
I get it, man.
I wasn't talking to anybody. Nobody knew. Keith didn't know. Mm-hmm. None of my friends knew. Because they would have thought you were weird if you said, dude, I feel like I want to kill myself, man. I'm late to school every day because the biggest fight in the morning is, am I going to get out of bed and face the day today? Or am I going to lay in bed all day? Because that's what I really want to do.
Yeah.
It's just lay in bed all day. So
where does it go from there? When did you pick up the booze?
For me, it started with weed. Started smoking weed first.
How old?
I was 18, a late 18. Bloomer.
So you went through 6 years of hell before you started self-medicating.
Yes.
That's a long, ouch.
The bike kept me busy. I was on the road a lot.
Right.
2 to 3 weekends a year, or 2 to 3 weekends a month, 5, 6 days a week. You know, I'm busy. You know, I'm in my gift, so it's taking away that pain, but it was still there. So 18 years old, I get offered a $120,000 computer job down in San Diego.
And this is a while ago, so that's like...
This is in 2002.
So that's like a 200 grand.
Yeah, I was going to do well for an 18-year-old that wasn't going to go to college. I was going to work with this guy who ended up being wanted by the FBI for being a Ponzi scheme scam artist.
Mm.
And he was supposedly going to start a wireless internet company back in 2002, develop these internet radios, put them outside of rich neighborhoods in Rancho Santa Fe, and he needed a network engineer to manage the network and do all the installs. And so I had a computer gift at this time. Well, when I got offered that job and I went home thinking that when I graduated high school and moved down to San Diego, I'm going to be making 6 figures, I stopped riding my bike.
Mm.
When I stopped riding my bike, then I started hanging out with my friends on the weekends. They were all smoking
weed.
Which
was like a new thing for a jock, because a jock is pretty busy on the weekends.
Right. So, well, at least my kind of jock, you know, a football player, Monday through Friday, you know, weekends are all partying. So now I'm seeing people smoking weed and drinking. And I said, I'll try it one time.
Yeah. One time.
That's it.
One time.
Because I was a super judgmental person at that point in my life. So if you smoked weed, you were bad and this and that, and I'll never do that. And, you know, I really casted my own thoughts and realities onto other people at that time in my life. I really try not to do that. Not that I'm perfect, but I really try not to cast my reality onto other people. And I'm going to try it one time. But my dad was an alcoholic.
Mm.
His mom.
So he was an alcoholic.
He was a weekend binge drinker.
And that didn't affect you at all during your childhood?
Yeah, I'm sure it did. Because he would come home sometimes upset, but he was really good. He was really good at managing his life in terms of employment, coming home. He wasn't violent. He wasn't, you know what I mean? He wasn't throwing
things.
Was
he present? Was he there for you? Was he like, did you have a good relationship?
Emotional neglect was a big thing, but because they weren't ever home.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, I have to be tiptoe around that because I don't blame my parents. You know, they really did the best that they could, but emotional neglect, the more I've focused on self-improvement, you know, and I look back at what was missing, I didn't have, you know, my dad missed a lot of my games because he couldn't, my basketball games, because he couldn't get off of work.
Yeah.
One of the most devastating things for me wasn't that I was sexually abused. It was.
So you had sexual abuse?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, okay.
A lot of drug addicts have.
Yes. I have been. Yeah.
So I recognize that being in the field that I'm in now, right? Well, my dad, that didn't happen to me. What happened to me was I was at a basketball game and I'd look into the crowd and everybody's dads were there except for mine.
Right.
And it didn't matter if my dad only missed 5 games out of the 10 that we had. Everybody else's parents were coming to every single one. And I would look into the crowd and my dad wouldn't be there. And I'd say, who cares?
Yeah.
Now, when I look back on it, what was happening was my mind was saying, why am I not important enough for my dad to take off work to come see me, but everybody else's parents make it? Which started to compute a story in my mind. Doesn't mean that it was reality, but I started to write this self-pity, self-worth story that I wasn't good enough, and that carried through. So when, you know, I tell myself I'm going to smoke weed one time, I don't recognize that, hey, one, we didn't know what we know now about addiction and alcoholism back then. The DARE program was a gigantic scare tactic away from cartel-driven drugs. They didn't even mention pharmaceutical drugs. And I have to have this debate with a lot of people that when I say the older generation helped spread stigma and spread lies about substance abuse and drugs, they say, well, how did we lie? Well, my DARE booklet didn't say anything about pharmaceutical pills. It said LSD, heroin, cocaine, marijuana, and baby barbiturates, shrooms, psychedelics. That was it.
Deception by omission.
Right. You didn't. And the way it was given to us, it was that the people on the lower side of town were the ones that used drugs. They didn't right. say that, hey, the rich people have drug problems and alcohol yeah. problems too, but they didn't understand addiction. So my dad's mom, also drug addict, alcoholic. Her dad, same thing. So it's in the family.
Had the genetic lineage, yeah.
Yeah, my brother, 2 years older than me, never tried a drug in his life. Can have a half a beer and walk away from it, and it just puzzles me.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, he yeah. could drink a pitcher one night at the bowling alley, and then the next night drink a half a beer and walk away from it, and yeah. it's because it's not necessary. He doesn't have to do...
He doesn't have the allergy.
He doesn't have the allergy, right?
Phenomenon of craving.
So I try smoking weed, and of course, within, you know, a month to 6 weeks, I'm doing it every single day, just like I told myself I wasn't going to do.
Same.
You know,
well, you started at 18. I started about 15.
Yeah, I started late, especially mm-hmm. now. On the road, I've been to many campuses that have had kids overdose on heroin in the parking lot.
Yeah.
16 years old.
Yeah. Heroin's insane.
I did a thing in Ridgecrest, California. They had to medevac a kid that overdosed on honey oil, of all things.
Hmm. I don't even know what that is.
He'd never done it. It's like dabbing.
I don't even know what that is.
The liquid THC that they make.
Okay. I've been out of it for so long, I don't even know anymore.
Yeah, that's probably yeah. a good thing.
No, it's good. Like, I got sober before weed was legal, except yeah. in, like, Europe.
So now, basically, they've come up with ways to extract the THC. It's like right. hash, but liquid form. So the quantity of THC that you're getting in yeah. one rip is
yeah.
massive.
So it's not your mama's weed.
No, when we smoked weed, you know, it was like... make you cross-eyed because you could get some really good stuff. Well, imagine a kid that's never smoked weed and the first thing he does is this high density
and he OD'd on honey oil.
But well, basically they didn't know what was going
on.
He was
unconscious, right. passed out.
He'd never smoked weed before. The first yeah. thing he get is concentrated THC yeah. and it basically sends him into a
child.
Loop.
He's
right.
a child.
This
yeah.
is, and this is 15, 16 years old.
Yeah.
Me, 18 years old.
Yeah.
Start smoking weed every single day. What I tell people is that I didn't realize that there was a doorway that existed.
Sure.
And that when you walked through the doorway and you stepped all the way in, you weren't going to get to just turn around and walk back out because you thought you were done.
Right.
I didn't understand the game that I was about to play.
Yeah.
Most people don't understand the game that they're about to play. Even ones that would be considered mild addicts.
You totally.
Know, I'm full throttle. Not everybody's a full throttle addict. Doesn't mean that you're not an addict. But it also doesn't mean that you can just walk in and out of this doorway as you please. That's not the way it works. You sit on the other side.
Some can, some can't, and people die trying to figure out when they are. Right?
Exactly.
Right. I can't do it. So listen, this is great. By the way, this is KX935.com. We're also on Rehab 411 Facebook. Hope you guys are enjoying it out there. I'm here with Tony Hoffman, pro BMXer Supreme and world-renowned recovery and... life coach speaker,
mm-hmm.
probably a better word way to say that, but I think I got the point across. Let's throw in your song now. What's the story behind the first one?
Okay, well, the original song that I was going to have them play, they didn't have a clean version to it, and it was an old 50 Cent track before 50 Cent actually blew up.
Yeah.
He had an album before he got shot. He got shot, they pulled his deal, but he still had that album called The Power of the Dollar. But this one is Pusha T, which is still one of my favorite artists. And it's a song called Drug Dealers Anonymous. And
so, yeah, why'd you pick this one?
Because, it was two tracks, right? One
yeah.
of the old me and one of the new
yeah.
me. And this
song... Were
you
a drug dealer?
I was a drug dealer.
I could see that.
And this track...
Just kidding.
You're not the only one that says that. We laugh now. I laugh now because I drive a nice car. And my dad's like, your neighbor's got to think you're a drug dealer for sure. But this song really depicts kind of the glamorization of nice things. When I was a young man, I was under the thought that to gain nice things, you would do what these rappers were talking about, selling
yeah.
drugs, get the car, you know, get the clothes, get all these, the jewelry and stuff. And so
yeah.
I chased after that lifestyle, the glamorization of that lifestyle. I still like nice things, but I don't have the order of operations
right.
I was thinking then to achieve those kinds of things. And so that's what this song is
You're
about.
Not gangbanging them. No. All right. So this is Rock to Recovery Radio, and this is Pusha T. We'll be right back.
Valentino summers and wave runners. Chains on my niggas like slave runners. Drug dealers anonymous. How many Madonnas can that Mazda fit? My brick talk is more than obvious. It's ominous. Garage is the phantom. Ghouls, ghosts, and goblins. Blonde mohawk, the collection. I'm Dennis Rodman. The money count is the only moment of silence. Cause hush money balances all this drugs and violence. Hat trick under my mattress. Date I stop steal has an asterisk after it. After all, I can make a call. I can baptize a brick as I wash away my sins like a Catholic. Who the f***ing master this? America's nightmares and Flint. Children of a lesser God when your melanin's got a tint. And I can't even mention what I sent or what I spent. Cause my name in 18 wheelers is evidence. I put my booze in them cruise collections. Life's a bitch A to Z on her shoe collection. Take your pick, paid in full like 86 G's on my body. The new Gucci has less monogram. God's got him. Let he without sin cast the first stone. So I built that all glass quad level first home. Shatter all of your misconceptions. Hold all of the missing weapons. You thought I would miss my blessing. The ultimate misdirection. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your husband was a drug dealer. For 14 years, he sold crack cocaine.
Federico Fellini in the flesh. Sergio Cecchini inside his mesh. I've been bracking since the 80s. Google me, baby, you crazy. 89 in London pulling Benz. Type it in, Google's your friend, bruh. 14-year drug dealer and still counting. Who deserves the medal of freedom is my accountant. He been hula hooping through loopholes, working round shit. IRS should have had the townhouses surrounded. Thanks to the lawyers, I marbled the foyer. I tore the floor up, yeah, that's where the koi fish. We been dining on oysters. I walked through the garage, it's like multiple choices. I told them pull a Royce up, I'm getting ghosts. I'm hearing noises, I think it's the boys. But I've been banking the Deutsche. We got storefronts, we got employee stubs. We've been opening studios and 40-40s up. The paper trail is gorgeous. Cases, we bury some before a reasonable doubt drop. The jury hung. Bling, bling. Every time I come around your city, bling, bling. My tenure took me through Virginia. Ask Teddy Riley about me. Ask the federales about me. Try to build a cell around me. Snatch my nigga Emery up. Try to get him to tell about me. He told 12, give me 12. He told him to go to hell about me. Drug dealers anonymous. Y'all think Uber's the future. Our cars been autonomous. Mules move the drums. Take them to different spots. We just call the shots by simply moving our thumbs. I'm a course of miracles with this sh-. Nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists. Therein lies the peace of God. I always knew I was a prophet, but I couldn't find a decent job. Life made me ambidextrous. Counting with my right, whipping white with my left wrist. Damn, Daniel. FBI keep bringing them all white vans through.
I like it. I like it. What's your homie's name?
KP.
KP. KP's like, man, you're playing a hip-hop song on rock radio. I'm like, I love it. I grew up on that hip-hop stuff.
He's my co-host on our podcast. Well, I have a podcast. He's one of my co-hosts.
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was cool. So thank you. It's a nice change-up, man. I like that song. So here we are, KX, 93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM, Human Crafted Radio. I'm your host, Wes Gear. We're doing Rock to Recovery Radio. We're talking about addiction and mental health. I mean, rarely do we have an addiction story that doesn't have some serious mental health issues. A lot of people will talk about, I think, more than we even acknowledge, to be honest. I think they shouldn't even call it addiction. They should call it mental health and then secondary addiction, like all the time.
Right.
That's my opinion, and I am not a doctor. But we're talking here to Tony Hoffman, BMX mega champion and you know, world-renowned speaker and recovery advocate, life coach kind of guy.
Yep.
Yeah. So in your story, I think it's really interesting that from 12 to 18, while you're crushing it, dominating in pretty much every sport, you started feeling isolated and you were suicidal. Mm-hmm. That's incredible. In a, you know,
you wouldn't think that would happen, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You also wouldn't think somebody like Kevin Love, who makes, I don't know, $20 million a year, would go from a live TV basketball event to running off of the bleachers into the back room because his anxiety is so bad. He was having a panic attack.
Yeah. And when you say because you were saying one doesn't usually believe. I believe.
Oh, now. But I say that it culturally. Yeah.
Culturally, we don't believe.
We're trained to believe that money fixes everything.
A success.
If I just had $1 million, all my problems would go away. No, if you had $1 million, you're going to have a lot more problems.
Right. I have a guy I mentor, and he lives the hip-hop dream. He already has a Mercedes, and he already lives in Laguna Beach, but he thinks if he's doing, you know, rap videos, he's going to be happy. It's like, and if he has $1 million, it's like, dude, you're going to be the same bummed out dude you are now.
Yeah.
I used to walk off stage, drink myself to oblivion because I felt so lonely in a club of 2,000 people that I signed autographs for, go to my bunk in my tour bus and hope that I would die and not wake up.
Yeah.
Mental health, man.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a war of self-acceptance that I was going through at that time that I didn't know that I was going through, but it was internally at its strongest point between the ages of 18 and 23. So I go from smoking weed at 18 years old. Within 1 year, I get introduced to cocaine. That was not even that big of a deal after I'd already smoked weed. You know, you open that door and you walk through, everything after that is just an easy progression.
Yep.
You don't see it coming, but it happens very quickly. I get introduced to pharmaceutical painkillers, Oxycontin.
Was that prescribed or?
No.
Okay.
It was, we started with Vicodin. One day the dealer didn't have Vicodin. He said he had these new pills called Oxycontin that we needed to try because it was Vicodin on steroids.
Yeah.
And as 18-year-old kids, we didn't understand that the stuff that came out of the orange bottle was the same stuff that came from the cartel. It was just packaged different. And because it was packaged different, we were like, oh,
it's okay.
It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Because the DARE program says heroin, crystal meth, cocaine, crack, psychedelics.
Right.
Those are the ones that the people on the other side of town are messing with.
Yeah.
This is the safe stuff. No. Within 3 years, I committed a home invasion robbery, strung out on Oxycontin, went inside one of our best friend's mom's house, robbed her at gunpoint.
At gunpoint. That's not a smart decision.
No, it was.
She might have been able to identify you.
Yeah, she eventually did identify my co-defendant. I tell people it was the biggest mistake that I've made in my life.
Yeah.
I've made some big ones.
Armed.
Yes, armed.
Burglary.
Robbery. She was there.
Is that what it is?
Yes. Burglary is nobody's there. Robbery is forcefully taking something.
I thought robbery was like a liquor store and burglary was like a home. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You were too busy touring on rock shows to be getting into criminal activity, clearly.
I had a few. The night of my record deal, I was prowling looking for a cell phone. I got arrested, but let's not talk about that.
Looking for a cell phone. You're such a criminal. So, you know, we were desperate. And I try to tell people the desperation of opioids when you're coming down, whether it's the pharmaceutical grade version or the heroin or fentanyl now, you'll do whatever it takes. And whatever it takes, I've seen dudes go the opposite way, and that's whatever it takes for them. For me, whatever it takes was I was going to sell drugs and take what I could from people to get the money that I needed. And that day was a home invasion robbery.
And people don't know. I think a lot of people at home haven't been dope sick on opiates. It's like the worst flu, but you can't sleep. You poop yourself. You pee yourself. It's like the worst flu times 10. You can't eat. There's nothing. You're just in this. You're crawling out of your skin. Your skin hurts. Your bone hurts. You can't even poop, right?
Yep. This is exactly what I tell people. It's like the worst flu times 100.
Right.
And the scariest part about this flu is, unlike the real flu that you have to wait for it to run its course, you can stop this flu.
Yeah.
It'll go away. Just get the drug.
Yeah.
And that is what changes every person. I don't care if you're a 45-year-old mom living in Beverly Hills or a junkie on the west side of town living in Skid Row. Once that hits, you will do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And whatever it took was that robbery. Within 6 months, an investigation started around my friends because they kept robbing people. I told myself after that robbery, I'm never doing this again. It just felt so bad. I just, you know, the universe, God was speaking to me and said, you made the biggest mistake you've ever made in your life. 6 months go by, cops find out where I'm staying, they raid the place, I go to jail. My parents spend a bunch of money, it keeps me out of jail. I tell myself I'm never using drugs again, but I find myself drinking because I don't got a drinking problem.
You got a
drug problem.
The opiates.
Yeah, within 30 days, I was in the hospital with an infection in my hand because I knocked this guy's tooth out and didn't clean it well enough. So the infection's up to my bicep.
You're getting in fights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm rowdy.
Yeah.
I used to think trouble seemed to find me. I just put myself in harm's way every single day because of my attitude and way of thinking. My perspective was completely skewed. And so,
where do you think that anger came from? That's where that comes. It's an anger. We're mad.
Well, I didn't fight on my own. I just helped people. So the only time I fought on my own was in jail or in prison.
So when you say you helped people, meaning there's another scuffle, so you're jumping in.
Yeah, my buddy got in a fight. He got knocked out and was like, well, I guess I got to help him.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a good friend, loyal to the bone.
I would have been like, man, that sucks for you. I'm going to drink this beer over here.
Yeah, no, I knocked this guy's tooth out and I ended up getting jumped. And when I knocked the guy's tooth out, my hand got infected. And they gave me fentanyl and sent me home with a prescription of Vicodin.
What year is this?
2005.
2005.
2005. I'm 21 years old. And 3 days later, I steal the pills and walk out of my family. And
where'd you steal the pills from?
My mom was locking them up in a cabinet.
Oh, were they your pills?
Yeah, they were Vicodin.
Oh, and
they
she
gave
already
me
was
surgery.
Hip to it. Yeah.
Yeah. So she says, hey, you're a drug addict. I'm going to give you these pills, one pill every 4 hours. My mom thinks that I just can't follow instructions. She doesn't understand that once this drug hits my body, the obsession starts and I can't turn that off.
Right.
I was powerless over that addiction, that obsession that was occurring. So I stole the pills in the middle of the night, left my family. And for the next 2 years, that was hell. Mm. Went from OxyContin, got introduced to crystal meth. Crystal meth.
I almost want to high five you. I did tweak too, but I'm not going to high five you.
Yeah, I'm not. I wasn't a good tweaker, man. I'm not a good tweaker.
Well, I mean, tweak like a gentleman? Is that the goal? I mean,
I don't know, man. I've met tweakers that could go to sleep, and I'm the tweaker stays up for 12 days.
A tweaker
and
that goes to
six.
Sleep has been up for 2 years straight, and it's that thing, you know what I mean?
I don't. My tweaking run was 6 months long, and I'm grateful for that because that drug is the worst drug that you can use, in my opinion, outside of something like fentanyl that's devastating our country because people are ODing and dying.
You die so fast, yeah.
But I tell people, there's a lot of people right now that are dead that are walking the street breathing.
Sure, but they still got a chance when they're dead.
Yeah, but when you're talking to yourself and you're spinning circles and you've fried your brain to that degree, what kind of chance are we talking about?
They got one.
Yeah. So I get introduced to the needle. When I get introduced to the needle, there was nothing else that mattered. Mm-hmm. If it couldn't go in a spoon and put in a needle, I didn't want anything to do with it. Then I ran out of money because I was staying up so many days on crystal meth. I couldn't afford to keep up anymore because I needed the opioids, which was my drug of choice. And then crystal meth was just this, like, everybody else that I'm hanging out with is doing it.
Yeah.
Ran out of money. Somebody says, well, you just need to go to the West Side, pick up heroin, quarter the price, same thing. So I started shooting heroin. Yeah. And at that time, you know, I lost all my friends. KP had been gone for years. You know, I'm hanging around people that easily could have watched me overdose, left me there, not even called the cops or the paramedics and left because they have no attachment to me. That's the kind of people I'm hanging out with. These are just random drug users that could
lower companions.
They don't care about anything other than their own high in that moment. And so
that's the one thing we could say too, is like, we could rationalize our using a million different ways. But the reality is when we're addicted really bad, we're not hanging out with the creme de la creme. It just doesn't work that way.
No, no.
Yeah.
And so I had no childhood friends at this time. I actually was removed from a house that was my childhood best friend. His dad just said, you can't stay here anymore. And that's when I started sleeping on the street.
Mm.
And, you know, I've worked with a lot of drug addicts and a lot of kids, you know, young 20, 21, 22, 23. Oh, yeah, man, I know what it's like to be homeless. Really what they mean is they were sleeping on their buddy's couch.
Right.
No, bro. I was sleeping in dirt fields.
Yeah.
Sleeping behind dumpsters. Sleeping at schools that I graduated from. I was homeless. People didn't answer the phone when I called. People were trying to get as far away from me as they could. I remember one time I was shooting dope with this Bulldog gang member and some people that I knew from school. And the guy's like, are you going to use all that? And I looked at him. This is a Bulldog gang member. And I said, don't worry about it, bro. If I die, just throw me in the dumpster. When we leave there, everybody leaves there. I'm walking out behind everybody. They all get in their cars and they leave. They knew I was there. But they left because they don't want to be around me. Yeah. I'm a full-blown junkie. You know, a menace to society. Get away from this guy. He's crazy. He's, you know, been up for so many days. He's talking crazy. He's, look at how he's using drugs. Nobody wanted to be around me anymore.
No.
And so I'm walking around town by myself, sleeping in fields by myself, with a prepaid phone that was constantly running out of minutes. The only way I kept my drug addiction alive was that I had all the connections in the west side of Fresno and the projects that people needed to get the dope from. And they actually, that side of town trusted me enough to where I could go there, score the pills, sell them, just turn around and get enough money to buy three pills for myself. It wasn't even about making money anymore. It was just about getting pills.
Just getting by, getting well. So how you go from near death, just being a, you know, a corpse, a zombie, you were a zombie.
Yep.
You know, sleeping on the streets. How did you hit your bottom? What was it?
January 21st, 2007, I had a spiritual experience that changed my
January
life.
January 21st, 2007. Okay. And I was December. All right. I was just, yeah.
And I had a friend that called me and said that God gave him a vision and I was going to get three significant chances. And if I didn't stop doing what I was doing before these chances took place, I was going to go to prison.
Wait, your friend?
Yes.
Called you?
Yes.
And had a
randomly
vision about you?
Yes.
That you had three chances?
I was going to get three significant. Don't
significant.
Leave significant.
Okay,
out.
That's important.
That's very important.
Okay, significant.
Significant chances.
Chances of to get sober or change your
no,
life.
No, three chances were going to happen. And if I didn't stop doing what I was doing before these chances took place, I was going to go to prison. In November of 2006, I was pulled over three times in 4 days. Each time I was pulled out of the car because I was on felony probation. The first time I had a needle between my butt cheeks. I hid the needle between my butt cheeks. So when they searched me, they didn't find it. Second time I was pulled over, I had 64 Oxycontins that didn't belong to me. The driver insisted that I hold on to his pills. And I said, well, if I'm going to jail, I'm going to jail with a bunch of pills and I'll at least get through a month. Put the pills between my butt cheeks because they pulled me out of the car. And it ended up being Thanksgiving night. I lied about being on probation and they ran my name and just get out of the car. Why are you lying? Tried to call my probation officer, but it was Thanksgiving at like 10:30 at night. She wouldn't answer the phone. So he said, this is your lucky day. Opens the car, puts me back in my car and we leave. Next day, nothing happens. The next day after that, I'm in a car that when we get pulled over, I don't know why we're getting pulled over. Turns out when the cop comes up to us, she says, do you know the tags are fake on this car? And they were construction paper. I didn't know that. Car hadn't been registered in 5 years. No registration on the vehicle. She didn't have a license on her. I'm on felony probation. I've got pills in my pocket. She's got heroin in her pocket. And I've got a backpack loaded with about 100 needles because I go to the needle exchange. She gave us a fix-it ticket.
Dang.
And let us go home.
So those were your three chances.
2 months later, I was invited to a church.
Were you like telling this or is it in hindsight?
As soon as that
out?
Cop, yeah. As soon as that cop, this is the God honest truth. As soon as that cop got in the car and gave us that fix-it
the third
ticket,
one, yeah.
I said, that was the three chances that Adam was talking about.
Yeah.
She says, what are you talking about? I said I was going to get three significant chances. I was like, I've been pulled over three times in 4 days.
All felonies waiting to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Easy ones.
And I'm
too.
Already on probation. This is
yeah.
easy.
Yeah.
They would have struck
Slammed
me.
Up.
They would have gave me a strike for that. Grand theft auto, felony possession of narcotics. I mean, the third one was lined up. Could have gave me a lot of time.
Yeah.
2 months later, I'm invited to a church, January 21st, 2007. And I went. And I didn't like God. I didn't like Christians. I wasn't a Jesus person. Yeah. I don't want to do this, but something told me I need to go. Don't remember anything about the service, but I know the pastor.
Now, you're not sober this time.
No.
Right?
No.
Did you go in there loaded?
Of course.
Well, that's one thing that was telling you why you don't want to go.
Yeah. Well, no,
church
I
loaded
had a distaste.
Doesn't sound good.
I just, in my opinion, church, Christians were all about money. It was fake.
Right.
It was a control mechanism. All these things that we would hear, you know, typical atheists say about faith-based organizations, call them religions, if you will.
Yeah, I find most people really don't have a problem with God. They have a problem with all the things that have tainted their view of it.
Right. And I'm okay
Humans
with that because
stuff,
I don't like the same things they don't like.
Exactly.
But the closed-mindedness of the truth behind it, I think is very hurtful. not only to themselves, but other people, because then we go around hating people that have different opinions than us, mm-hmm. instead of having that open-minded, loving approach to say, you know what, hey, I don't believe the same thing as you, but that's okay. I want the best thing for you. I think we're in a culture now where if you don't believe what I believe, you should be crucified and wiped off the earth because you're wrong. And yeah. we need to get rid of you people that are wrong.
The world's very polarized, yeah.
Yeah. So I go up to an altar call. The pastor lays his hands on me and says that God has favored me my entire life and everything that I've done, and that I don't have to worry anymore because he's going to remove me from my addiction.
Wait, the pastor did that? Did yep. he like just know?
It was an altar call at the end.
And he just had this, he just knew you're addicted? Are you probably, no?
He knew nothing about me.
But I mean, in essence, he knew because he called it out. Gonna help well, you with
something told him I was.
That's what I mean, yeah.
I mean, obviously wow. I didn't look like I'd been favored. I mean, I got a Dickies jacket on, yeah. size 13 and a half Shaquille O'Neal shoes. I wear a size 9, folks.
Yeah.
I'm size 36 LRG pants. And if anybody's ever bought LRG in the past, those were true to size, like baggy. I'm
yeah.
not looking favored.
Yeah.
I was beat up. Blood stains all over my Dickies jacket, you know, from using needles.
You look like a drug addict.
Yeah. January 21st, 2007, that night I went to sleep in a home that I broke into that was up for rent. I woke up at 2 p.m. with 4 guns drawn. Cops were inside the house. Took me to jail 30 days later, sentenced to 4.5 years in prison. 4.5 years in prison became the best thing that ever happened to me.
Mm.
When I was in prison, I felt this calling from God, the universe, something greater than myself, whatever you choose, that said, I need you to get back on your bike. I need you to go to the Olympics. I need you to start a program for kids, and I need you to tell your story. Nice. And instead of running away from that, because I felt that when I was a little kid, when that coach said, don't you want to be a champion? There was something inside of me that said I was different. Hmm. And I don't think that when I say that I'm different, that I'm better than anybody else, I think everybody else gets that same feeling. I'm different. I'm unique. There's something for me. What we do is we give that up for the world. And when we give it up for the world, we lose our potential, we lose our ability to change the world, we lose our ability to accept ourselves, and we lose our ability to go to sleep and wake up every day feeling like I'm supposed to be here right now.
Yeah, find your purpose.
Find your purpose, right? So I went on a spiritual journey, this total mode of separation where I didn't care about any external noise. I no longer, like I stopped listening to hip hop for a long time because the hip hop fueled that vision of drug dealing and the gore culture and degrading women, and because I was unable to separate them at that time. So
yeah.
I separated myself, prayed and meditated, and I focused on those four visions. And when I got out of prison, I was an entirely different person because I learned how to change my life one micro process at a time. And when I first got this vision that I'm supposed to go to the Olympics, it was like, how the hell am I going to get to the Olympics? I know I can ride a bike. But it just came to me, the micro process. I'll start learning how to brush my teeth every single day because I didn't know how to do that. After I learned how to brush my teeth, I learned how to organize my stuff. Then I learned how to make my bed. Then I learned how to train physically for BMX in prison, even though I wasn't going to get to touch a bike for 2 years. I think one of the biggest mistakes that people make is they say, I'll change when. Mm-hmm. I'll change at this point. I'll do it then. What I was looking at was, what can I do now? I'm not going to wait till I get out to make this vision happen. I have to start creating momentum today. And today that momentum is brushing my teeth. Tomorrow that momentum is brushing my teeth and making my bed. And as I got further along into this micro process, I was graduating from small tasks that seem extremely insignificant to the average person in the world to getting out of prison, getting on my bike. 5 months after getting out of prison, racing my first professional BMX race I've ever raced in my life, hadn't touched a bike in 7 years. I took third place.
That's awesome.
But that's beyond my talent. That moment was not just because I was talented. That moment occurred because I was in a prison cell at Wasco State Prison, and I said, I'll start with brushing my teeth.
I love it.
Because right now, somebody's listening, and they're saying, I'm so screwed up, I can't change. I've got so much against me, I can't change. Well, yeah, because you're looking at the end picture. Yeah. You're not looking at what you can do today. If you stop the noise and you sit down and you start listening to yourself and you listen to God in that moment, the universe, whatever power greater than yourself, or just the stillness of whatever's in that moment, you'll start to hear what it is that's holding you back. Because if you're praying and you're meditating correctly, you're completely focused on yourself, your role, your decisions, your accountability, your responsibility, and what you can do.
I love the self-empowerment. Let's throw in the song. I love it. I'm digging it. So set up this next song for me. By the way, this is Rock to Recovery Radio, KX93.5 FM. I'm your host, Wes Gear. Also on Rehab 411 on the Facebook Live, here with BMX champion and recovery rad man, Tony Hoffman. So we got a song we're going to, Kid Cudi. I don't even know. Is that how you say it?
Kid Cudi.
Okay.
He's a genius, and it's featuring Kanye West, who happens to be, if somebody said, who would you like to go to lunch or dinner with right now? I wouldn't blink. Kanye West. The world needs more of him.
Is he yay? He's yay now.
We call him Yeezy. We call him yay. We call him whatever he needs to be. His verse is what I really like. He really depicts the image of the world and how he doesn't like the party scene, what people say, and he's trying to separate himself from that because it's meaningless. And that's where I'm at in my life. Yeah, I drive a nice car. Yeah, I love fashion. But the order of operations and how I've got there is not to lie, cheat, and steal.
I'm not consumed
by worldly things. I enjoy them because I've been blessed.
You're doing the right thing.
Right.
And getting the fruits of your labor.
Yeah. And so this is all about moving forward in life and not letting these other things that are meaningless consume you.
That's right, baby. Rock to Recovery Radio.
Specially invited guests me out. Y'all been telling jokes that's gonna stress me out. Soon as I walk in, I'm like, let's be out. I was off the chain, I was often drained, I was off the meds, I was called insane. What an awesome thing, engulfed the shame. I want all the rain, I want all the pain, I want all the smoke, I want all the blame. Cardio, audio, let me jog your brain. Caught in an Audi home, we was all detained. All of you Mario, it's all a game.
I'm so reborn. On me, Lord, I'm moving forward, keep moving forward, keep moving forward. I'm so reborn. I'm moving forward, keep moving forward, keep moving forward. Ain't no stress on me.
Forward. Keep moving forward. Ain't no stress. on me, Lord.
I know that song. That's a great song. This is Rock to Recovery Radio. I am your host, Wes Gear, and we're here on KX93.5 FM with Tony Hoffman, Olympic athlete, trainer, BMX champion, world-renowned speaker, and gnarly story, dude. I love it. So you had the three significant chances. You didn't get felonies, and then you did end up getting sent to prison, though.
For the robbery that I committed in 2004, convicted in 2005, I was on felony probation for that. My parents spent a bunch of money on an attorney to keep me out of prison. Me being a white kid from the right side of town also helped, and the fact that my co-defendant's dad was the lead robbery squad detective of the Fresno
PD. So you put the, and I just want to push through this because we have a limited amount of time, you put the prison stay to work, and you really got focused on being, I don't know, just so, you were self-motivating, insanely.
Yeah, and I think that that's kind of always been my personality. I just learned that some things work for me, some things work against me. And when I was willing to accept responsibility for everything in my life, I was also willing to accept that I wasn't perfect and that I needed to work out those imperfections, my judgmentalness, my bad attitude, my codependency issues, and all of these things that were kind
and
of
how'd
working.
You do that?
Prayer and meditation.
Nice. Reading, that's huge. So you
for me, reading the Bible, spiritual material that was positive, that would lead me to the truth.
Cool.
You know, so I get out, start racing. The first year I won 5 races at the lower pro division. Got moved up to the Olympic level 1 year after being on my bike. Picked up a microphone in 2010, 1 year after I'd been out of prison. My first year at the Olympic level, I made 6 finals before I blew my knee out, which basically ended my career. Did a ACL reconstructive surgery with no pain medication. 6 months later, I started my nonprofit organization called the Free Will Project, which is a action sports organization that works with at-risk kids.
Love it.
Academics, choice-making skills, and personal finances. We have summer camps and after-school programs. We've been on hold now because my speaking has gotten so popular. I tried to put some people in charge of it, but they couldn't raise the money that we needed to raise. But
Free Will Project.
Free Will Project. Still have a website. Everything's there. Freewillproject.org. I started coaching athletes in 2012. And by 2016, had three national champions, 2 world champions, 25 athletes from Australia to Bolivia. Went to the Olympics in 2016 with Brooke Crane, my top female athlete, who I just finished up an Olympic camp with in San Diego at the Olympic Training Center. She's now training for Tokyo. And today, I am now one of the most sought-after substance abuse speakers in the country. I spent about 200 days on the road this year, and I'm not where I want to be, but I spend a lot of time on the East Coast and the Midwest where the opioid epidemic is.
Just gnarly.
Dude, I've seen semi-trailers, 50-foot, stacked with bodies, because the morgue can't process them fast enough. 3 people a day dying in that community of 40,000 people. California has no idea what it's like. You go to states like Pennsylvania, Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana.
I heard like Vermont, New Hampshire.
Maine, Maryland, Delaware, Connecticut, the seaboard, New York, New Jersey. Devastation.
Gnarly.
Devastation.
So listen, because we're pretty much out of time. If you're listening at home, I mean, Jiminy Christmas, you were a dead man walking the streets.
Yep.
And now look at your life. So if you're home and you're a junkie or a tweaker or alky or you have suicidal ideation, the one thing I hope you would get from the story is recovery is possible. But what I didn't say at the beginning of the show, which I usually do, is we don't just recover. We get into what I like to call it the vortex of radness. We unlock and unleash the best part of ourselves, like what you were talking about, doing the self-analysis and repairing your deficits and all that.
Yep.
And look at this person you become.
Yeah, I think you reach a point, or I want everybody to reach a point where you accept yourself and your uniqueness and you live it out unapologetically. I loved in the beginning when you talked about we're in a time now where we talk about addiction, we talk about mental health, because I love the program. Don't get me wrong. I'm a friend of the program. But I also believe that we should be removing stigmas in the communities around us by talking about our addictions and letting people know you're not alone. It's okay. If you're a drug addict or an alcoholic, it's not the end of your life. It just means that you're different in certain ways, and that when we learn how to live out that difference and we learn how to live out that uniqueness, we're actually, in my opinion, the salt of the earth. We provide the flavor to brother. The earth because we're different. We're not like everybody else.
Yeah, weird is good.
We show up on time. We're honest. We forgive people when they do us wrong. You know, we become willing to do things like picking up cigarette butts outside of meetings when everything inside of us says, we'll let somebody else get it. You know, we become people that can be trusted, people that can be looked up to, and people that can confide and have empathy for other people.
Amen. Tony Hoffman, thanks for coming down and sharing your story. That was incredible. Your homies drove down from Fresno. Y'all, thank you for your energy and coming. This has been Rock to Recovery Radio. If you're out there looking for answers, they're out there. You're not too sick. You're worth it. You can do this. Ask somebody. Let them have a chance to give you some help.
Amen.
We're out.
KXRN LP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX 93.5.